完璧などありえない。この世界は不完全だから、美しい。
バカバカバカ、
なに
俺は海賊王になる。
なんて恋しさなど。
力を渡した時に言ったことを覚えているかい。クエ、違う、そこじゃない。
変態遅い。
Hello and welcome to More Than Hentai, a podcast that is here to show that anime is far more than just tentacles and cat girls. There's also countless stories of love, loss, laughs, hopes, horror, and happiness that is dying to be found. And I, Brendan White, the Salt and Pepper Senpai, I'm here to help you find them. More Than Hentai is proudly powered by our friends over at Audio Technica and Dash Water. So go upgrade your audio and hydration games today. And joining me on this episode is a man who is equal parts Titus, university student, and recent One Piece converted tragic. He's also one of the co-founders of the Explosion Network, a fantastic collection of content creators who've been crushing it in the Aussie gaming and culture space for close to a decade now. You can find all their juicy written video and audio related content via their website at explosionnetwork.com. Did I mention they house over 23 different podcasts over there? Jesus Christ. From an anime standpoint, he enjoys things such as Haikyuu, Blue Lock, Black Clover, Samurai Champloo, and Mashoko Tensei, to name but a few. You can find them in the socials at your boy Ringo. Kieran, you talented son of a gun, welcome to the Riverside Studio. How might you be doing?
Hello, hello everyone. I'm great. Holy crap, that intro. I feel really old now, almost a decade of podcasting and content creation. Like it's really weird when we think about it. And it's something we've thought about with the recent Rooster Teeth shutdowns. Mm-hmm. We started because of RTX like 2017. Like that was where we met at that event. So I guess, yeah, we're getting to that point where we're more and more getting closer and closer to a decade of podcasting and creating things and 23 shows. It used to be very much a meme between all of us at Explosion Network of you know, what ridiculous show we'd come up with next, or where we would go to next, or what watch along we'd be doing. And so it's funny to look back on.
Yeah, your ambition certainly knows no limits, because I'd just jump on X, formerly known as Twitter, over the years and be like, oh, now you guys are doing a Fast and the Furious thing, now it's a Marvel watch along, Game of Thrones. Like, I was always sitting there going, where do these guys and girls find the time to make this happen? It astounded me.
It's definitely I pay a lot of it to Ashley and Dylan. I think they will often record Arcade Couch, and then after it they'll be like, hey, we're doing this. Just like, oh yeah, all right, sure, all right. And then it's like, here's the schedule for it. And I think it's a lot better now. There was a point where we would schedule it. Our schedule was ridiculous, where we were doing like a Ghibli watch along, but at the same time doing a Marvel watch along, and then it was very much balancing watching movies outside of podcasting and everything else in life. That was which is fun. We're working on it. We're just about to embark on an X-Men watch along in preparation
for 97. Or are you going back to the start? Or
we're going back to the start. We're doing it. I guess all the movies leading up to Deadpool 3 and Deadpool and Wolverine. So we're going all the way through it. We've just literally started recording, so we'll start with First Class and go through it. And we've just watched X-Men Origins Wolverine as well, which is
it's a time. Yeah,
that was a watch. That was definitely a watch, and definitely it's always fun, and especially going back and watching certain things, as we did with rewatching Spider-Man or Fast and Furious. You go back and watch things that you probably haven't watched in a decade, and you go, "Oh, this is not what I remember it to be," or there's elements of these movies that I completely forgot. So, no, it's always good fun too, and it's always nice to have a reason. I think part of it is Dylan likes doing these things, but he doesn't like not having a reason to do it. Like, it's very much a case of from discussions with him, he likes having a show reason to be productive with his time. So it's always good, and it always makes good content in the end.
Yeah, especially because all the stuff you guys are doing is evergreen as well. Like,
100%.
People could have not discovered Fast and the Furious somehow or some way, but they stumble across your podcast 2 decades later and go, man, I need to listen to this. Now I need to go watch these films, or you could do it in parallel. So it's nice to know that there's not a like an expiration date on any of the stuff you guys are doing too.
No, 100%. And it's especially like Studio Ghibli's are probably our most evergreen stuff. Mm-hmm. Like that is consistently in some of our best rated podcasts and monthly listeners. And it's ridiculous. And I remember when we embarked on Studio Ghibli, you don't quite realize the 20 something movies that you're about to embark on and the range of kind of whiplash of mm-hmm. emotions that you're going to be experiencing throughout that journey. So no, it's really fun and it's really great to see things. And like even stuff like I had somebody refer to me about Tales of Thaldum, which is a D&D podcast we did. Damn. Years and years ago.
That's a deep cut.
and that's a very deep cut, you know? Like it's very funny how long we have been doing stuff now and the different iterations we've done. And I'm really proud of where we're at today with it.
Hell yeah. Yeah, you guys are one of the pillars and one of the last standing bastions of the Aussie sort of content creation scene. Like, you know, we came up in similar time frames, and you see people come and go over the years and shows start and end and whatnot. And you want one of the longest standing creators out there, I think, the Explosion Which Network is, these days.
It's crazy, because especially when we used to we used to like look up to you guys at 8-bit when we came in, and you. Even to this day, maybe myself, maybe not so much Dylan and Ashley, but like for me personally, I still very much feel new within the scene. Like I don't feel like that stalwart. Like I don't feel like to say it now, it's like been, you know, almost a decade is ridiculous. Cause it's like, oh, okay, maybe you're right. Maybe I can be a bit more comfortable where we are, and I can be a little bit more, not so much relaxed, but like know that we exist. And it's funny, you know, last couple of years we'll consistently like be very lucky enough to be amongst like the Lizzie nominations, and it's ridiculous to see. And it's, you look back from where we started, you know, our original podcast was Pleasure Explosion, which is very heavily sexual innuendo. Like it's you look back on that like when we started, and that's a really and we have, you know, we look back at our history, and there is a penguin named Bevan that is probably out hunting us to kill us right now because we forgot about him. So you know, it's there's been very a lot of iterations, and we've come a long way, so it's nice to look back on it.
That's it. Yeah, you look back at all the evolution and the content change and the tonal shifts, but yeah, you guys are consistent, which is I think the biggest thing in content creation, and that's what's going to separate the winners, well, not winners from the losers. That's probably too aggressive no, a sort of thing to say, but like the ones that are going to have that long standing success and sort of position in the space is the ones that are consistent and can deliver quality content. And like how many podcasts do you think you've done over the last year?
Oh, there's got to be like there's some like it just depends on what we've done, because yeah, we ran like even when I look at Early Late Nights, which was the esports show I did two times a week, and I did that for a year, and so that's 100 episodes by itself. I think there's more than that. I think I maybe did it longer, and I never can look at it, but we consistently up to I think Platinum Explosion, which is mainly Ashley and Dylan, but I was there for the first 150, 200 episodes. We're up to 400, 500 episodes potentially with that. Like Arcade Couch feels like it's still something we've only just started, but I think that's now, it's been going for a decent amount of time. I don't have a direct number, but it's a ridiculous lot. Even when, you know, as you said, 23 different shows, and those shows could have covered a wide variety of things. Some of them are very short, and like they are, you know, toot sweet. Like Tales of Thaldum's, I think it's only 10 episodes. Mm-hmm. But you've got, yeah, Arcade Couch, or the new show we're doing, Between the Cushions, which is, you know, just us sitting back and talking crap and enjoying ourselves with it. So yeah, I don't think I count episodes anymore, and there's a lot of times where Dylan or Ashley will remind me what episode of something we're up to, because it's just a lot of it is just spending time with friends still and spending time with those two. And I think because there is such distance between us, Ashley living in Brisbane and Dylan living in Tasmania, it is recording those shows is the best and the most frequent way we spend time with each other for it.
Yeah, I think that's the best thing that comes out of content creation is the friendships that are cultivated and that constant touchstone that you have, where, you know, people get busy and whatnot, and you might not talk to your friends as much as you'd like sometimes, but having that constant with Explosion Network there, where it's like, hey, let's jump on and record this thing. It gives you a good excuse to jump on a microphone or on a camera and talk life, but then also create some content on the same on the same sort of journey. So I can completely relate to what you're saying there. It's one of the most rewarding things of this this crazy content creation world. But I guess we'll say you've recorded somewhere between 500 and 1,000 episodes
easily,
yourself.
I guess, at the minimum, that's minimum. Yeah, easily. That is very much without there. And then amongst that, with Twitch streams and the written work we've done on the podcast as well. That is, there's a lot of effort goes into it and a lot that I'm very proud of.
Hell yeah. Make sure you take some time to reflect on those victories, big, small, or otherwise, because the work that goes into this stuff is often not acknowledged or noticed by the consumers. I don't mean that in a bad way to the consumers. No, it's just there's 100%. A lot of stuff that goes into making that content you love. So be sure to appreciate what you got. So we'll sort of narrow that lens now from into an anime sort of type of discussion here. And you mentioned, you did do the Studio Ghibli watch along. So we haven't sort of prepped you with this question, but I just want to throw it at you right now. Have you got like a rough top three? It doesn't have to be, 1 to 3 or top three favorite Ghibli films that come to mind that
have a place near
dear to your heart.
Okay, so Ghibli films very easily starts with Spirited Away. Mm-hmm. Spirited Away is I feel like it's a lot of people's firsts in terms of Ghibli, and it's a lot of people's entry, and it was definitely my personal entry. I remember not only like watching it when I was a lot younger, but remember randomly, it was one of those movies that if you were watching free-to-air TV, it was always on SBS. Yeah. For whatever reason, Spirited Away was always on. I think an underrated one, but I think is the most impactful of the Ghibli movies for me, is Grave of the Fireflies. Is insane. I don't think any of us were prepared to watch that movie, and just the journey and the emotional trauma mm-hmm. you go through watching that movie is insane from an animated movie. And then I'd have to go Ponyo. I think it's crept up my list now, but Ponyo, not only for a general story is really great, but I think my own connection to the Beatles, Ponyo takes a lot from the Beatles in terms of art style. And, mm-hmm. There is actually a Yellow Submarine in that movie, and the art style from Yellow Submarine is very much dictated throughout Ponyo in a lot of its character designs and its general art design. So, those three would definitely be my top three for Ghibli's.
And there's the connection with the social handle at your boy Ringo, then the love from the Beatles, and it all sort of comes full circle there, through Ghibli.
Yes, 100%. And it's one of those things. I think that amongst my real life friends to this point, like, I get called Ringo more than I call Kieran. Like, it's my best friends, if they call me Kieran, I actually have a weird reaction to it. I'm like, what are you doing?
Am I in trouble?
ew, what the hell's that? I am just, is to my closest friends, like in real life, it's, Ringo is just the name I go by now. And it's very comfortable for me. It's got a real sad kind of, maybe a little bit angsty teenage origin point, where I did a lot of theater and a lot of stuff when I was a teenager, and amongst my friends I felt like I was the least talented person.
Aww.
And we loved the Beatles, and I was like, I connected to Ringo because Ringo wasn't even the best drummer in the Beatles. So it makes me laugh, and I look back at it now, it's real sad looking back, but at the same time it's just a part of me now, and it's very much something I'll just have forever.
You own it, you build off that, and you can become the best drummer in Explosion Network. I am sure of that.
I you know what, maybe I don't think Ashley could drum. I could cut off Dylan, so I think I'm good there.
Nice I'm in just about lockstep with you with top three. I'd go Spirited Away, Grave of the Fireflies, and depending on my mood it could shift between Howl's Moving Castle and My Neighbor mm-hmm. Totoro are probably the other ones that sit up the top there, but depends on the
Howl's is always up there. Kiki's Delivery Service mm-hmm. is up there, and Princess Mononoke is always up there in those kind of I remember watching. I never watched Totoro as a kid, and I couldn't believe Totoro. When we watched it the first, I was like, this movie is, all I know is it's about a lovely, a lovable cat bus and everybody loves Totoro, but that movie's really sad.
Yeah.
And really emotionally draining. And you look at like some of the theories behind it towards some fan theories about that movie. And it makes you laugh when you go, oh, this is so beloved by so many people. Yeah, mm-hmm. it is. And that's a lot of Ghibli movies. There's a lot of Ghibli movies are very dark and have those
Miyazaki I reckon he's carrying a lot of trauma from the years, and you see it bleed 100%. Into this content so often. Like, yeah, it's vibrant and the characters are whimsical and cute and funny. But yeah, there is this realness and this rawness throughout the themes in these movies that until you get to a certain age, they just go completely over your head. And then you watch them as an adult and you go, holy shit, this is pretty dark. This is some heavy stuff.
100%. Even with, like, you know, Spirited Away, with the parents being turned into pigs and stuff like that. Like, that's traumatic to watch. Like, that is, I remember that not being okay when I was a kid at the very least. But yeah, it's definitely, or even like the sadness at the end of Kiki's Delivery Service where, you know, I look at Kiki's Delivery Service as like not a happy ending because like she loses the ability to talk to her cat. Like, she can't talk to her cat anymore. She loses so much of what was she was as a person at the start of the movie. And the movie wraps up almost to be like, yeah, everything's okay and we're all great and she saved the day. And you're like, okay, I feel like she's lost a lot though and we're kind of ignoring that, but all right, sure.
Yeah, save the day, but at what cost? So we're pouring some out for you, Kiki, right now. But yeah, sort of going into a broader anime lens, let's talk about how you found this fantastic medium, some of your favorites, some of the maybe tropes that you like, don't like. Let's sort of take this conversation wherever you want to go with it.
Sure. So anime started for me in 2007, 2008. Mm-hmm. I actually worked in a local game store called Tons of Games. And part of that game store was also anime DVDs. And I started out with, of course, Naruto, which was releasing the end of normal Naruto at the time and just starting Shippuden, at least for DVD releases here. And so, started there, quickly dove into your shonens and your My Heroes and your Bleaches. And then, like, in maybe the last 5-6 years, this love of sports anime has just come out of nowhere for me, and that started with bloody Haikyuu, which is ridiculous. I Haikyuu is my all-time favorite anime, like, just in general. Like, it is it's really funny, and I have this thing where I'm very much a crier when it comes to wholesome moments in animes, and even to the point where I will see clips or I will see moments, or like, I really actually enjoy watching YouTubers react to animes for the first time as part of it, where, and it's like the same moments will get me every goddamn time, especially from Haikyuu. Haikyuu have moments where I'm just there is such good storytelling, and Haikyuu was my first ever sports anime, and I remember looking at it being like, I don't know anything about volleyball. I don't know. Why am I going into watching this? And then by that, like, first, second episode, it's like, oh, okay, I'm in. And I'm learning about volleyball now. Like, I am, like, 100% in. You're learning about it and you're connecting with these characters. And, like, you get to the end of season one, and the season one ending is such a heartbreaker. It's such a gut wrench. And yeah, no, it's I'm very excited for, I'm a little sad that it's, they're turning to movies for the rest to finish off Haikyuu at the moment. I've started reading the manga to go forward a little bit, so I don't, you know, go with it. But yeah, Haikyuu very especially started off a love for sports anime, and then that's blossomed into watching anything and everything that is sports anime at the moment.
Haikyuu is so special, and it's still, like, it doesn't defy belief, but like, it's crazy to think that Haikyuu's been turned into an anime. It's been running for, you know, a decade, give or take. And yet we're still only in the first year of these kids being in this team. So you sit there and go, man, like, this is going to be running right through to my 70s potentially. And like you said, they're shifting to film now instead of a bit more long form storytelling through the more, you know, syndicated episodic way, which is kind of upsetting in a way, but I'm excited we're getting more, because after the end of the later season, I'm like, are they going to finish this story? What's going to happen? Like, it's such a long time between drinks with the development of this Haikyuu content into a visual medium, and it's good and bad, because I'm very impatient. I want it all that. Now.
And it's almost like you throw it to them at the fact that they went, you know what, season 3, 9 episodes, 1 game. It's one game of volleyball the entire time. And it has some of the most impactful and well built up storytelling. Like, Tsukushima's storyline throughout it is maybe one of my favorite storylines in anime, just because it's told in such a almost subtle way, because Tsukishima as a character isn't the main character. He's a side character. He's not the biggest personality. He is, you know, at the start you think he's a total jerk. Like he's just, he's antagonistic towards Kageyama and Hinata. And you end up getting to episode 4 or 5 of that season 3. And it's insane how much love there is for that character and then how that changes. And then rewatching season 1 and 2, and you take a lot more from his storyline the second time around than you ever did the first time.
Yeah. It's so well done. And just good sports anime in general. Like you referenced Blue Lock, which has just sort of made its way to the screen over the last 12 or so months. Phenomenal concept, phenomenal animation, and I cannot wait. Like it hypes me up. Like it was crazy because it came straight off the back of Aoashi, which I really, really love.
Love Aoashi.
Great love football it. Anime. And then Blue Lock came out, and then I'm like, Aoashi, who again? Like, because it just captured my attention fully, because it was just that, like, Aoashi is more grounded, more realistic and emotional, where Blue Lock just dials it up to 11 and just leans into these crazy anime tropes that I just love and I can't get enough.
It was funny because I think either Blue Lock, I think, came out either towards the end of Haikyuu season 4, or it was definitely like, I remember coming off watching Haikyuu either for the last season again or for the first time, and then go into Blue Lock. And it's such a shift in the different mentalities for a sports anime. And I remember watching that first episode, and you watch that first episode, if you watch it through a Haikyuu lens of, you know, oh, this is going to be about building up teamwork and interpersonal skills and and all that, you watch it, and then he slams that ball into his rival's face at the end, and this character you think is being built up to be an important character, you think is almost a Kageyama to a Hinata style relationship. And I remember just losing my mind at the end of that first episode of watching it, and just how good that is. And you see just the reaction for that and how that is. Like, Blue Lock's one of the shows that I've read the manga of Blue Lock to keep up with it, because it was just like the way season 1 ends, and I just didn't want to, you know, wait for that or let go of that just yet. And I think it's such an interesting take on sports anime, where, you know, so much of sports anime is believing in yourself and the power of friendship and teamwork and all that stuff. And Blue Lock is just the opposite, and it does it so well and so interestingly. And it rides that line of, you're not quite going out of bounds of being unrealistic, but you're not going like Kuroko no Basket kind of unrealistic. Like, you're kind of riding that line very well. Yeah, no, I absolutely love Blue Lock. Even like Ace of the Diamond. Like, it's like, not a baseball fan, but Ace of the Diamond, and it's crushing. I remember getting to the end of where the anime is at, and it is such a bittersweet ending to where the anime is currently, that it's so well done. And I think it's one of the things I love about anime in general, is that I don't know if it's just mangaka writers in general or just the Japanese culture about it. They're very okay with their main characters just not having a good time, just having sucky outcomes. Like, even just like, and it's funny, I haven't watched all of the last season of Jujutsu Kaisen yet, because as it is so, everything, it just sucks for Itadori at the end of that season. Like, everything sucks. And you watch it, and I'm not quite ready for that. I think I always have to be in the right mental headspace to watch it and know what's coming through. So to have Ace of Diamond, we're watching all of it, and then it's also not sure if that show's ever going to get continued, or because I know the mangaka has either stopped writing or doesn't want to go back yet, and there's not enough show for them to form into, or not enough manga for them to form into a long enough anime. But it's that in general. I think, yeah, it is very much to a point where new seasons or seasonally it is checking for okay, what sports anime's up this season? What's going on now? What's next? You know, the hopes for Aoashi season two, which is, you know, there's still no word on if they're going to continue or not, or anything like that. And you've got the hype for Blue Lock, and Blue Lock's definitely, you know, Blue Lock is just going to have to be, you know, you could tell with the hype around it, and looking forward to going and watching Haikyuu at the same time in the cinemas. It's so crazy nowadays where anime is as a medium and how well respected it's becoming as a medium. Mm-hmm. There's still definitely moments of some Japanese culture that I'm, you know, not the biggest fan of. And I think as anime fans, you get used to not so much looking away from, but just being like, hey, not okay with it, but I'm just going to push through it. I think, you know, a lot of anime treatment of women and the sexualization of women and female characters isn't something that sits too well with me a lot of the times. You know, the last season of Sword Art Online had some really weird stuff in it, and Sword Art in general had some really weird stuff in it. And even though Sword Art in Stages is terrible, I still have, like, it's Sword Art is the junk food of anime world, where it's like, you know, it's bad, but it's a guilty pleasure. Mm-hmm. And it's still something to be enjoyed and watched for. And I'm still somebody who has always said, you know, Sword Art Online should have just stopped after the first like 19 episodes and should have just been like, yep, that's it. Yeah. Self-contained story. We don't need to do anything else. Those kind of tropes with females in anime, and you respect a lot the animes that empower their female characters and give their female characters more to do, and they're not going to getting stuck in that kind of fence of Sakura syndrome from Naruto. Like, I think she is the highlight for me in terms of she's a good character, but they could have done a lot more with her to make her feel a lot more valued within the series as a whole. Yeah, it's just there are those tropes with anime, and those are increasingly getting better. But yeah, at the same time, it's still a fair way to go.
Yeah, I echo exactly what you say there to the T. Like, even I'm watching Shogun now in parallel with my usual anime consumption, and it's the same thing. You still see those same cultural issues in relation to women and the tropes that are rampant in most episodes of anime, but now you're just seeing it in a live action lens with a big, massive AAA budget attached to it. And like, it's really great, and it's gorgeously shot and great actors involved and whatnot. But seeing how this is set in like the year 1600, and then you're watching anime set in present day, and it's like, they're still getting treated the same way. They're still not seen as real value adds to certain scenarios, and they're just there as a plot device or a sexual object and whatnot. So like you said, it is certainly improving, especially from anime that was done in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. I think we're looking at it in a slightly different lens now in the 2020s, but it's still got a little bit of a ways to go. And it is definitely a cultural thing that I hope will change over time, but we'll see. We'll see.
But even with the case, like, I don't know if you watched the art anime Blue Period.
I love Blue Period.
Blue Period. When Blue Period was revealed to have a trans character in it, and very central character, and they also didn't make a big thing out of it. Mm-hmm. Like, they very gently brought the storyline in. They didn't, you know, make any jokes about it. It was done in an overall respective way. That's a big leap for anime in general, and I was very excited to see that. And Blue Period on its own was fantastic. Was really good. And it's really funny. I struggle, and this was something that we made jokes about on Studio Ghibli Watch. I very much struggle with slice of life anime. Slice of life anime isn't necessarily for me, because it's just, I don't enjoy the pacing a lot of the time. But stuff like Blue Period, I think, is absolutely fantastic. And if you can drag it in and pull me into it, then I'll watch all of it. Like, Blue Period, very much, if people haven't watched that anime, you should definitely make time to go check it out.
Hell yeah. And you can check out the episode we did unpacking Blue Period on here with my friend The Wraith. So check that out on this feed once you're done listening to this episode with Kieran here. But for the people that are stopping by for the first time, the way More Than Hentai works is we're going to be doing a singular deep dive on an anime that my guest and co-host has yet to watch at time of initial discussions. They fill out a bit of a pre-qualified question and answer so I can get a bit of a feel as far as what they're into, what they like, don't like thematically, maybe some of their favorite anime, like stuff that we just talked about, and then put a few recommendations on the table and say, hey, what do you think about this? Do you want to check it out? We go away separately, check out that first episode, and then we deep dive on that first episode front to back. So this episode will be full of spoilers surrounding episode one only. We're not going to go beyond that as far as ruining major plot points and twists and reveals, but we will be diving deep on episode one. And the title in focus for this week's episode is none other than Mob Psycho 100, which is a web manga series written and illustrated by One, and it was serialized in Shogakukan's Ura Sunday website from April 2012 through to December of 2017. By December of 2023, the manga had sold over 2.8 million copies, and 2016 saw the first of three anime seasons produced by Bones released, with season two releasing in 2019 and the third and final season releasing in 2022. Total episode count for the anime is 37 plus two OVAs at time of recording. There is also a live-action series available, as well as a spin-off manga series titled Reigen. Mob Psycho 100 currently holds a score of 8.49 on My Anime List based on 1.2 million user reviews and is the 31st most popular anime overall on the website. And the story of Mob Psycho 100 is as follows. Eighth grader Shigeo Mob Kageyama discovers his psychic abilities early, but soon realizes their dangers. Suppressing his powers, he uses them to impress his crush, who becomes uninterested. Seeking control, Mob turns to Arataka Reigen, a con artist posing as a psychic who exploits Mob's powers. Now Mob spends his days exercising spirits, but his immense potential and unchecked emotions could lead to a catastrophic explosion impossible to prevent. So we are going to be deep diving on the first episode called Self-Proclaimed Psychic, Reigen Arataka and Mob. But Kieran, let's jump in. What was your first, like, what's your overall general impressions? What's your overall vibe with Mob Psycho 100? Because it is very different to most anime that I'd say all of us can chew.
Yeah, I think I'd always seen, going into Mob, I'd always seen and heard very good things about Mob Psycho, but there was always something about the art style when I looked at it that I could never quite wrap my head around or be like, yes, okay. And watching this first episode, I think it's so interesting how much this anime is set into in such an absurd setting. And mm-hmm. So it's a service just in general of just, you start and it opens up with this crazy, like over the top, introduction that you have no clue what is going on, why it's happening, and it very quickly jumps into this, yeah, almost this absurdist comedy throughout the entire thing of, and it juxtaposes that absurdistness with serious action and shonen action really well and really mm-hmm. interesting. I think watching it, even like the end of this episode, I wasn't 100% like, am I bought into this anime? What even have I watched? What am I going on? Like it's got really interesting premise, and I think the some of the actions they take towards the end of this episode is really good at being like, hey, you should watch a few more and keep hooked into this and keep going with this. I think it definitely gives the animators license to explore whatever they want to and draw whatever they want to and just be very over the top with everything that they do.
Yeah, it is insane. And I'm with you. Like, I've heard strong positive things about Mob for many a year. And I was the same. I'd see some of the trailers or just the stills and I'm like, I don't know if this is for me. This is a weird animation style. It feels like it would be playing just after Ren and Stimpy on Nickelodeon or somewhere on Adult Swim. Yeah. I'm like, this is so unlike anything else that I watch from the anime universe, and it was really jarring. But like you said, it allows them to be so much more absurd and over the top, and they walk that tightrope and somehow manage to not fall off the majority of the time. And yeah, this cold open, it just, there's like this ethereal spectral space battle with this all-powerful being, you don't know who it is, just sort of black silhouette with the power outline around them, getting attacked by all kinds of creatures, and a very creepy smiling moon that made me feel very uncomfortable. I don't know what it is with like sentient moons in media, but they always weird me out all the way. And even going back to like the baby son in like Teletubbies. It always just weirds me the hell out. Like,
and just thinking of that. Exactly.
So rewatching this first episode and I saw that moon, I was just like, ugh, I don't like this. Like, get off my screen. But yeah, we see already a little bit of foreshadowing where they see this number slowly climbing from number one. And you're like, okay, this is going to play a big part into what's going on here in the overall story. How and why, I don't know, but you're seeing as this, you know, spectral black silhouetted figure fighting all these creatures is doing things and massive big explosions and exorcist and spiritual based abilities. That number slowly ticking up and you're like, uh-oh, what's going to happen? This is bad news bears. And you see the specter get captured and is about to get eaten by one of these weird space hell beasts. And then the counter hits 100 and then boom, it's like apocalypse has just occurred or something, like big giant grand nuclear explosion. Like, okay, this is pretty hectic. This is big. I don't know what's going on. I'm happy that scary moon's gone away. Then we get a very quick title card flash of like, you know, Mob Psycho 100. And then it pivots into this narrator explaining the world, almost sort of shifting from this space-like fantasy environment back to, you know, modern Japan, and explaining that there's strange phenomenon around and you know, people have stepped up to fight the darkness and the shadows and they're known as psychics. And you're like, ooh, this is all right. This is kind of cool. It's absurd. It's slick. But I'm enjoying this just blender of madness and I'm interested. So I was sitting there rewatching it again today and I'm like, yeah, this still hits the same.
100% it does. And the opening section, and it's funny, and I think it continues throughout it where they have this art style, as you said, yeah, fits into Ren and Stimpy and that kind of time period. But then also you could tell that the animators, whenever they want to, can be as detailed or as pretty and interesting as, like, there's the scene later in the episode where Mob's trying to eat food and his spoon bends out of him and drops the food. The detail to the food itself that they do, and you're like, this is ridiculous how they can have, yeah, they blend the art style with super detailed stuff and super intricate animation is so interesting. And you can tell throughout it, from the opening scene all the way through to the end of this episode, the animators are just having fun with it. They're just enjoying to dig their teeth into something completely new and completely different.
And that's it. Like Bones, like, they're a very, very well acclaimed studio. Like you mentioned, you know, watching My Hero Academia, they've done both versions of Full Metal Alchemist. They've done Space Dandy, Bungo Stray Dogs. So they've got like a pretty impressive resume. And this is so unlike anything they've done before. So I think you nailed it, where it's like they can just have fun with this and just experiment and do things that are just so left of center for them. And it just works. Like, it's just enjoyable. The soundtrack is great. The art style, yes, can be jarring at times because, yeah, the characters are typically pretty stripped back, but the environments and the finer details like the food or even some of the combat scenes where you're seeing explosions and impacts of physical or spectral-based attacks, there's so much more detail in that compared to, say, Mob's art style, where it's very subdued. It's just some skin color and then it's black. Like, it's black hair, black outfit, very minimal animation and emotion on the face, but I think that contrast kind of works in a way to sort of sell the bigger picture too.
And I think it's like the word I always choose when I look at Mob and a lot of the other character designs is, and not in an offensive way, but it's boring. Like, it is like plain Jane. It is completely nondescript. And the way those nondescript character designs interact with everything else that's going on with the world is so interesting. And it does make those moments pop. And It characterizes Mob so well as this unrecognizable guy almost, that is you wouldn't notice him and pick him out in a crowd. You wouldn't think of anything special about him, but he is your almost traditional shonen protagonist in terms of power levels and his position in the world. But he's just, he's very low key in everything he does.
Yeah, and even in the vocal delivery, like, yeah, you don't see much emotion, whether it be in expression or vocal delivery the whole time. He's very even keel. He's just a very stereotypical young high school boy trying to make his way through life. And he's also a very powerful psychic. So, you know, I'm like, all right, whatever you're putting out here, Bones, I'm eating up because I'm enjoying it. especially like in this next scene where we're introduced to Reagan and he runs the spirits and such, you know, exorcism advisory sort of business that he runs on the side. And you can see very quickly that he's got that slimy, sleazy, used car salesman type of vibe to it. And we're introduced to him where he's trying to swindle this very desperate woman and her partner that are dealing with some type of spiritual situation in this building that they own. And we're getting this clash where the woman's partner is calling Reagan, you know, shady and it's a scam and you can't be trusted. And it's some really good back and forth, and it really sort of sets the table as far as who Reagan is as a character. And even though he is funny and sort of lovable in a weird kind of slimy, sleazy way, he also is a bit of a piece of crap.
He is. And I think it is, this is like the ultimate whiplash between that opening and between the high stakes, and then you whiplash to a very bog standard conversation and a very character driven conversations that are very down to earth and normal. And you could see, you know, replace him being a paranormal agent with him being a car salesman or him trying to sell a vacuum cleaner or something. Like it is very normal. And I love characters like Reagan just in general. Like there's just something about them. I think I'm always drawn to charismatic characters that even if they are morally questionable, I really like that about them. And I'm always drawn to it. So to see Reagan and his kind of how he manipulates the world around him and the people around him is enjoyable and funny to see as a whole.
Yeah, he cracked me up. And even though, yeah, he is not the the ideal citizen, yeah, he has got some ulterior motives and he's all about scamming and making all that money. And I'll always admire someone that's sort of working hard and on that hustle to try and better themselves. But there was a few moments in this scene at the end when he's managed to sort of pseudo convince the woman's partner about taking this chance, because he's like, you know what, if you take this deal, it's this much, and if you take this deal, it's this, and it's big money. It's like 12,000 yen is like the major exorcism package that he manages to convince them to take. But then he sort of says, also, you know, once we sort of exorcise this spirit, you lovely woman is going to go back to looking fine. You're going to look beautiful again. And then the guy's like, what? She looks fine now. Like that part really cracked me up. And then we sort of get a flash forward to them walking towards this this possessed building. And there's this little throwaway. It's like, oh my God, no, watch out. It's the butt chin goblin, which was also just a nothing throwaway couple of second scene. But it still just made me cackle because I'm like, this is just absurd and so silly. But I am here for it. Like it's got me firmly at this point.
And it's funny that kind of style and throwaway lines and that just runs throughout it. And it's so great that none of the characters react to it. They just play it off as that is just the atypical way this world works. And it is normal. And like ghosts are scary. Yes. But then also ghosts have ridiculous quirks to them. It's very, very well set at kind of writing that line where it's not a complete comedy, but it's definitely over the top and an enjoyable ride the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah. It does not let up for this 20 odd minutes worth of viewing in the first episode. And so, yeah, we see Reagan and the couple, they then enter this building and you can see how committed he is to this bit where he's acting like there's all this massive spiritual energy first coming from another building over the road. But then in this building here where this spirit has just got so much power and it's life threatening. So he's like contorting and twisting as if the energy is like consuming his energy and hurting him. Little do they know it's actually because he's scared of cockroaches and there's cockroaches all through this building, which is another funny little moment. But seeing him so committed and all about this power exorcist lifestyle that he tries to present himself that he lives, I'm eating it up like popcorn. And then I like here where we're introduced to the spirit and they use like name cards and title cards like you'd see in a video game. I like the way they weave that into this where they'll explain a character. And in this instance, the evil spirit known as the Ceiling Crusher. And so we see the Ceiling Crusher and then we get the narrator jump in again, informing us about Reagan's special attack, the salt splash, where he violently throws table salt. Then we find out because it's not purified, it doesn't do anything. So you're like, he's got all the toys and all the moves and all the the wise cracks, but below that he knows nothing, and it just cracked me up again.
And it's very funny. He gets to like Reagan plays the straight man a lot of the time with it, where it's like it's almost like he doesn't buy the fact that there is ghosts, but if the ghost does turn up, he isn't so much worried about it. He thinks he's got it covered. He thinks he's all right, you know. And it's just even like the point where he throws that much salt that like the lady and her partner gets covered in salt as well with it. And the ghost is nice enough to be the one that explains that it's not purified salt, so it's not going to work. It's so snappy. It's so quick. It's like it doesn't ever spend too long for a joke to get overdone or for it to be overplayed. It is very snappy, and it's very well paced throughout this entire opening segment.
Yeah, the pacing does not let up right from that open through to the ending. It's just bam, 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 bam. And so, yeah, Reagan then, in a subdued panic, he doesn't let the couple know that he doesn't really have any other avenues to pursue personally here to defeat the ceiling crasher spirit, calls his ultimate weapon. And that's where we get sort of introduced officially to Mob, who just takes a phone call. And, Reagan's like, Mob, need you to swing by. I've got a situation here. Need some assistance. And the next part made me laugh, I think, just about the most out of the whole episode, because everyone then just casually waits for Mob to appear. Like the spirit's just hanging out waiting. The couple's hanging out waiting. Reagan's hanging out waiting. And then Mob enters the building, and you can already see he's got this pretty impressive like psychic aura around him. So you can already tell that Mob's a bit of a big deal without even seeing him do anything just yet. So you're like, okay, you're a bit of a badass, but also this is cracking me the hell up, because they're all just hanging out, just talking about life, shooting the shit until Mob arrives, even Spirit.
And it's one of the continued things that I love, and it's a very small thing, but I love an anime that flip phones are still the norm and are still kind of used. And I think even to the point where like just the conversation between Mob and Reagan of calling him and Mob flicking the phone up and answering the phone, I think is so well done and well timed. It kind of hits that like it's almost like it's a good song where it hits that timing very well throughout this segment to keep it rolling, to keep it going. And it builds up, and even though we the audience see this aura around Mob, and we see, you know, present Mob as a big deal, when he walks into the room, it is so almost anticlimactic, because the ghost is like, oh, okay, you're now putting a middle schooler in here to fight me. Like, sure, all right. And it's just the flip from that to, you know, where we go next with it is so well done. And it's a mainstay throughout this entire show.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, the ceiling crasher spirit, yeah, sees Bob, thinks nothing of him, laughs it off, assumes he's just going to destroy this kid and then, I guess, cause harm to Reagan and that couple. But instead, Mob just raises one hand and boom, spirit obliterated, blown to spirit dust, or whatever the hell happens when a spirit gets blown up. And then we finally get the opening, and it is such a banger. It is a visual feast. Like, I wrote down that I'm riding a neon roller coaster, because the use of color, but also the song they use, 99 by Mob Choir, just really, really, really accompanies this opening very well. And I like that they're also doing the count. So it opens with seeing the number one escalate. Now it's present here again in the opening. And it's just a bop.
It's great. And like for me in general, a great opening is like kind of key for me to love an anime or to be kind of pulled into an anime, because I guess mentally I have tiers of it where it's like, okay, will I skip this intro? Will I add this intro to my Spotify playlist? Like, I really do in love anime openings and endings and Japanese rock in general. And this hits so well. It's so thematic to the show in general. I think even just like in the background, there's the beeps, like a detonation timer happening in the background throughout the entire piece. It does so well at tying in the show and being just naturally a part of the show, which is great.
It's so good. It's so good. And it really, really accompanies just the overall themes and the visual and the sound design that's used through episode one through to the end of season 3. And Yeah, I've got to go. Would you add this one to your Spotify playlist, or would you find yourself skipping over it? Where did it hit?
I'm not a skipper, but it's not like it's like a, I'll watch it and I'll enjoy it and I'll listen to it, but it's not a I will listen to this in a Spotify playlist. It's not okay. quite like I
it's
guess
not there yet.
It's not quite there yet. Sometimes they grow on me. I think there's definitely some anime openings that grow on me more. Like I think. It's really funny, like say Attack on Titan's fourth opening, which is the softer one of the every single Attack on Titan opening, is my favorite out of the bunch. And it just depends on what hits and where it hits and what I feel in connection with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer for that one, but it's certainly a strong open that accompanies a very strong anime. So yeah, the opening ends and we see we're back in spirits and such, Reagan's office, and he's counting this giant stack of cash. So clearly he swindled that couple after this successful exorcism. Then we find out he only pays Mob 300 yen. So he made like 12 grand off this couple, and yet Mob gets a paltry 300 yen off this. And so straight away I'm like, you know what, Reagan? I was liking you a lot up until this sort of moment, and I know you're a sleazy, slimy son of a gun. This isn't right. You are taking advantage of this young man more than I expected sort of leading into the previous, say, 10 minutes.
I think it sets up this really interesting dynamic between the two of them where it's both kind of balanced in terms of there are areas where clearly Mob is well-versed and he's well-understanding and he is well-thought through. And then there's other areas he's just completely ignorant of. And you can tell he just doesn't quite get this social dynamic and quite understand, but he's also at the same time, you know, I love in the previous scene where it snaps from him killing the ghost to immediately without even like having any cool like moment of explosion or anything, just be like, hey, I told you not to call me on such short notice, okay? Like it's just like in such a deadpan way, and it really develops their dynamic, but then Mob is a character as well at the same time.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's they're such a chalk and cheese sort of odd couple, Mob and Reagan. But yeah, they work so well together. But we find out in this little exchange too where Mob made a promise not to use his powers against any other people. Reagan sort of mentions that during this discussion. And then we get that sort of progress doomsday counter where Mob's explosion number has now suddenly already up to 22%. So you go, holy moly, this escalated very quickly.
It's in such an interesting concept in the show to all of a sudden have that counter continue and it be such an integral part of is Mob's explosion. And then as I think this is the element that carries me on to watching the next episode, because it's like, okay, what happens at 100%? Like what happens if he goes beyond that? Like, you know, what if is he, you know, does he go plus ultra like All Might? Like what is the go here? And I think it does a very good job at keeping you interested to find out what's going to happen and kind of build up the suspense and the mystery around Mob and what his powers are and who he is as a character.
Yeah, exactly. Like is that counter? Is that like a doomsday clock? Like is the world going to end and literally be blown up from his power hitting 100%, or is he just going to ascend to Super Saiyan levels or something when it hits 100? Who knows? And yeah, it certainly keeps the viewer, or at least myself from a personal experience, it kept me intrigued and entertained and wanting to know more. And then we flash forward to a scene you mentioned earlier in the discussion here where just a casual dinner setting. He's at the dinner table with his family. We see his mum and his dad and his younger brother there, Ritsu. And yeah, he's just trying to eat the old omelette rice with the ketchup on top. And we find out due to going through puberty, it leads to these spikes of psychic power and it keeps bending the spoons all the time. And the mum's really pissed about it, but the dad's like playing off. He's like, no, he's just becoming a man. It's all good. And we find out that, yeah, the dad's too soft on Mob. And then Ritsu, who's the younger brother, who's, I guess, the perfect moral student, the perfect son, because he got yet another perfect score on a test today. It's like, Mob, why aren't you more like Ritsu? We also find out that Ritsu really admires and loves his younger brother. He's like, I got your back, bro. Like, what do you need? I'm here to help. So it's nice to see this family dynamic getting established in this little scene as well.
And it continues the family dynamic tropes, I guess, around it of Japanese culture of expecting the best out of your kids. And then the moment they have something that is out of the ordinary or not quite in line with their expectations, it is, you know, it's very hard on them and very disappointed. And even though you'd go, you know, you think you go, even though your bending spoons and sure, that's good silverware that's being bent, but at the same time, it's like, okay, my son's got something going here. He's a psychic. It's very interesting. And you could tell Mob throughout it is very used to being in this position in life. It's great to see the brotherly dynamic, but it sets up an interesting point of family for this show in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, yeah, just thinking back to defining the powers getting spiked by puberty and manhood, it cracked me up. I'm like, that's a great way to explain these uncontrollable outbursts that Mob may or may not be dealing with in this episode and then future episodes. Like, I'm like, are they going to lean into this even more? Is this going to become an ongoing theme? And then I thought again in this next scene, because it flashes forward to the next day, start of the school morning, and we're introduced to Mob's crush, and he's just smitten, just as a young prepubescent boy does tend to, or a young warm-blooded human does tend to, where he's looking at her with hard eyes, but he does not exist in her world. You can see that very clearly, that he is just an NPC in this girl's world, and your heart bleeds a little bit for him in this moment, but I'm like, what's going to lead from this? Like, what is going to happen due to Mob's non-existence in his beloved's universe? Like, is this going to be a bad thing? Is this going to be a catalyst for the 100%? I've got so many questions, Kieran. I've got so many questions.
Well, and it's really funny because the way talking about that, you're like, oh, okay, that's like a very normal high school anime trope. And we call frame it around. So this school is called Salt Middle School in Seasoning City. When Mob sees his love interest, her friends are around her, but all of her friends' heads are different vegetables, and there's like a capsicum and a potato, and it's just so, it once again not commented on, nothing's discussed about it. It's just, that is the way it is. That is just, you know, Mob's own fixation on this girl and his love for her, but him being Mob, and as we've said, I've already called him boring in character aesthetic, and he's an awkward guy in many ways. So to see that and to see where he goes in this school or how things progress for him is, it makes you ask those questions and want to know what the hell is going on and who is behind all of this in terms of like the author. Yeah,
it's crazy to think about, because one who is the author behind this, like, he also did One Punch Man. And so tonally very different, artistically very different, but he's a very talented individual, because he's only 37 years old, like one otherwise known as Tomohiro. Yeah, One Punch Man, Mob Psycho 100, and he's also working on Versus, which is his sort of latest. And he's not only the writer, but he's also the illustrator. So he's a very, very talented individual. And yeah, I've got many questions, and one of them I want to throw at you right now. Like, if you had to have some type of fruit or vegetable head, what would it be and why?
I don't know why the first thing that came to my head was a carrot.
Okay.
Just because, like, it'd be kind of cool to have, like, not just have like the orange head, but just have like the green plume of leaves just at the top of you. I think that is, I'd say a carrot. What about you?
Maybe a strawberry. I'm such a sucker for a good strawberry. I think same thing. I can have the hair, so I can style the little mm-hmm. green, whatever the hell you call that, on the top of a strawberry. Yeah. I can style that the way I want. Maybe if I could rotate it the other way, I could have a little beard that way too, with the green plumage on the strawberry. But
so when you rotate it, do you rotate the entire strawberry around or just the head? Like, do you have like a pinhead top now as the strawberry, and like maybe a little, yeah,
maybe it's like Lego. You can just click it off and then like click it down here. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I guess my head would just look strange if the strawberry was flipped the other way.
Other way around.
Hard hitting questions here. More than
that's really getting to the bottom of this. And that's it. I think it's fitting for watching a show like Mob.
I think so. Yeah. Suspend your disbelief and just roll with it. Whatever they're throwing on screen, you just go, yeah, okay, this makes sense. So, yeah, we get this situation, and then Reagan again calls Mob to ask for assistance, but you can tell from the context and the explanation as to what's happening and why he needs Mob's help on this particular job, because a local council has reached out to Reagan to work with the Hanado Tunnel, which is notoriously haunted, and many, 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 many people have died in there. And something that's referenced in this sort of phone exchange between Reagan and Mob there, they say that the bitter hatred from those people must be swirling within the tunnel, and that's why it's so ominous. And you're like, okay, so spirit energy, good or bad, is sort of what dictates power and doom and gloom in this world. So I'm like, okay, another little note there as far as the world building and something that I sort of documented.
Yeah, and it's well set up, I think. Even just going into this and you go, okay, before this, Mob is up to 25%. He's got 3% increased from just his day at high school. And I also love the fact that the show doesn't linger. Like, it isn't like high school is just, like, his day at high school was just 2-3 minutes mm-hmm. of just snappy, kind of punchy moments of him, even like kind of showing him like struggling with soccer and kind of his running and that, building up his character in terms of his physical form. And then to quickly go straight into this and Reagan quickly pulling him onto the next thing, not having too much dead air, and to continue this frantic pace this entire episode is set within.
Yeah, it is rocking and rolling and moving as if it's on the back of a motorcycle potentially. So, so we're sort of getting some more context as far as what's happening in the Hernando Tunnel. Short version, it's bad juju in here. A lot of bad situations has played out in there, and they're walking through the tunnel, Reagan sort of powering ahead, and Mob's like, hey, I can sense, you know, over like 18 or more spirits in here, and they're all surrounding us, ready to attack. And then Reagan's like, it's all right, you take care of the small fry stuff. I'll keep moving forward. Don't worry about it. So Reagan's avoiding the conflict again, throwing Mob to the spiritual wolves here to fight them all. And you can see all these like spirits, flashes of light and attacks going on in the background as Reagan continues to walk through the tunnel. And we get a little One Punch Man Easter egg here because Reagan whips out the flip phone, as you mentioned. I love a good flip phone in anime. It's great.
I almost wish we had proper flip phones. Like, not even like, you know, there's like that Samsung flip phone now. Mm-hmm. But like, I'd be too scared of flipping it. Like, just that wrist action to flip it open, because it'd probably snap and break open and it's going to be expensive. Like, good flip phones of the mid to late 2000s. Like, I had a Nokia, or is a Nokia a Samsung Pebble? Mm-hmm. And that you'd like flick that out, and you used to think you were the coolest person in the world. Like, just this full flip in it, and it's just as satisfying as it makes it out to be in the anime in general.
Yeah, it's like the cool person or the technophobe's butterfly knife, like where it's whip and you just whip it out, and we get this moment where, yeah, Reagan whips out his flip phone and we see Saitama from One Punch Man is the wallpaper on his flip phone. I'm like, hey, Leonardo DiCaprio on the couch moment there when I saw that, because I never noticed it in previous watches of the mm-hmm. show before. So I'm like, okay, this is cool. Love this little moment. And then we're introduced to the evil spirit boss. We get the character card again, very video gamey, which, you know, it's thumbs up from me. And we find out that he used to be the head of a biker gang and they were all killed in this tunnel. You do a banana peel incident where one of the bikers hit a banana peel in this incident, crashed the motorbike, caused all of them to crash and die. And another situation there where I was just cackling during the rewatch. I'm like, this is so dumb, but I'm here for it.
it flows into the character of the motorcycle gang in general, just from this point onwards. Like, it's like, it's Reagan is building these characters up to be scary and kind of building up to be a big problem. And yet there's just this comedic nature to every character involved here. And it's so ridiculous. And it very quickly descends into just utter madness.
But it works. It works so well. So, yeah, we see Reagan realize that the evil spirit boss is in front. He's a bit fearful, but he hides that very well because he wants to use Banishing Soul Punch. And he punches the spirit, thinking that it's going to exorcise this spirit and all will be fine. Yet again, his attacks don't do a damn thing. The spirit is sort of chuckling there. Then Mob gets involved and does Mob things. And there's one line amongst this little exchange between the evil spirit boss, Reagan, and Mob where the evil spirit boss gets beaten. And I don't know what it even means, but Reagan's like, go back to the ozone layer. And I'm like, what does that even mean? I don't get it.
Look, just the hole in the ozone in this world, obviously, is where all these spirits came in from. That's the only explanation. And they're just trying to fix what aerosol did by returning the ghosts to it.
That's fair. I like that. Yep. And I sort of feel a little bit more at peace now after you explain that to me. But after this little exchange, you can see that the evil spirit boss, head of the biker gang, we find out that the biker gang were known as the Death Spectres. Fantastic biker gang name. I'm all for that. I can see that patched on the back looking good. But we also find out that there's an eviler spirit down the tunnel who's actually been ordering the Death Spectres around for many years and causing them to do the bad stuff. And this evil spirit has lived in this mountain for hundreds of years, and it's super powerful. So you're like, what's going to happen? Are we finally going to see Mob meet his match here?
And this is where, I guess, maybe if One Punch Man had existed before it, you'd be probably a little bit more tense and a little bit more unsure about where this was going with it. But then I think we live in a world now where it's very comfortable to be in like a place where the hero having a hard fight isn't necessarily important to the story, at least at the opening points anymore. Like the power of friendship and determination doesn't have to be a central focal point. Mm-hmm. It can be around, you know, as with Saitama and with Mob, these characters just being overpowered, but just the character stories around them and the characters themselves and how they interact with that.
Yeah, I like that. They don't lean into the Naruto or the Dragon Ball tropes where a fight's going to go for half a season and stuff. It's just wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Yes, they're extremely strong. They don't need to sort of dwell on it too heavily, give us too much context, because the overall world building and storytelling that's taking place can supersede a long, drawn-out, winded fight. So, yeah, it's cool that you can just sort of sense how much of a badass Mob is very early in this. But, yeah, the way they build out this next evil spirit, you go, ooh, this could change things. But lo and behold, he walks down the tunnel a little further. We see this spirit. It looks very creepy. Sharp teeth, many eyes, very, monstrous in shape, where the previous biker dude just looked like the genie from Aladdin, but just in biker form, where this is some kind of warped nightmare creature, almost like something similar to we saw in the opening scenes.
Yep.
But we get a really cool shot in here where Mob, or you can really see that, like, it's a really muted color palette. It's just black and white, and he's almost like just chalk outlines.
Yeah, chalk lines. It looks so good. Yeah.
And then he lights up with all these neon bolts of electricity and power, and it looks so damn good.
It is, and this is, again, this whole section, you just see the animators flex of, oh, this is what we're going to do with this series. This is where we can go with fights. Even just a very low level opening episode one fight, mm-hmm. we're going to do some amazing things. And he goes into such an amazing technicolored moment afterwards of the fight and him kind of destroying this creature. And then it goes to this very well-timed instant, just back to the normal art design and back to the character design. And it's a very interesting flash in the pan moment of this beautiful and amazing color. And I think across this episode, just the use of color in general is something that not a lot of animes do nowadays. Like, I think a lot of animes, you stick to one, maybe a little bit more muted color set throughout the whole thing for it. And then for whatever reason, like, a lot of the colors and moments just pop and are very vibrant and kind of almost overwhelm you just on pure colors while you're watching this episode.
Yeah, it is. Like, there's a few times where I've watched not only this episode, but the follow-on for the three seasons, where I'm like, am I on acid right now? Because there's a lot 100%. Going on here. I feel very normal, but also this is making me feel like I'm on something. And I mean that in, like, the best way, because it is so distinctive and so unique in the anime game. Like, the art style and just jumping from black and white monotone muted palettes to fever dream neon sensory overload and then back again. And, like, yeah, it is a bit of a whiplash, but it's a comfortable whiplash. Like, it works. Yeah. And, yeah, I love what Bones are doing here. And, yeah, we see that, yeah, this big, bad, evil spirit in the end of the tunnel isn't so big and bad in comparison to Mob, who just pretty much one-shots this thing. And we find out then that Mob finds a photo of the biker gang, gives it to the evil spirit boss, head of the biker gang. And the credits start to roll in this moment. So I'm like, okay, they're starting to wind up. How are they going to sort of put the cherry on top of this first episode? And we get this very cute, heartfelt moment where we see all the Death Spectres departing finally for the afterlife because they've been trapped in this tunnel after that freak banana peel incident. I'm like, that's nice. This is touching. I'm feeling for the Death Spectres right now. And then we get another funny moment, and showing that contrast, not only the power dynamic, but just that chalk and cheese between Mob and Reagan, where Mob's like, hey, why didn't you do a thing in this entire fight? Like, what were you doing in the tunnel? And then he pivots back to, you know what? I left all the small fries to you, Mob. And Mob buys that and, you know, consumes it hook, line, and sinker, because he idolizes Reagan, it feels like. He just looks at Reagan as he is, the super powerful, charismatic exorcist to the stars. And he's not any of that, but he sells it enough for Mob to think, this is the man, I worship everything he says and does. So he just accepts that answer and goes, yeah, no worries, that's fine. And then we get more progress shown on the explosion counter. So we've jumped up in this first episode alone up to 27%. And you're like, oh boy, what's going to happen?
I am in general a sucker for in anime where they start playing the ED before the episode actually ends. Like, they don't cut to a credits, but they're like, the anime's still going on and there's still character interactions happening, but they have a really strong ED kind of playing over the top of it in the background. I'm a sucker for it. They do it all the time. Like, Black Clover's really good at doing it. It's so the moment this kicked in, even though this is the first episode, I don't have a connection to the ED. I don't have it. So I'm like, oh, this kind of hits. All right. This is, and you have this kind of very tropey moment where, like, Reagan looks back in the tunnel and it's sunset in the background and he's like, what are you doing? We gotta go home. Like, it's like this whole like closing out moment of I guess when you look at it, you go, all right, this is where this is ending, but there is still so much more potential for where Mob can go, where Reagan can go, where this whole story is going to go and it's going to take us. And I think it does it so well at leaving it in a note that you instantly go in and thank God. It's like, you know, we are watching this in a time where episode two is already available. You're not, you know, watching this and then having to wait a week for the next episode, because you're instantly like, okay, I want to slide into the next episode straight away. I want to keep watching this straight away, because you're very naturally finishing this off and you're leaving the door open to go straight through to the next bit.
Yeah, it's a great bow wrapping sort of situation with this first episode. And I'm with you on the ED. I love when they can actually play more of the episode and the story out with the ED playing in the background instead of that hard cut to a predetermined ED and then like a little teaser at the end afterwards. That kind of irks me a little bit. But if I can get the full experience like this and then just a clean cut, I'm like, hell yeah, thumbs up, let's get it.
The worst one is, and this has been maybe for the last season of it, is solo leveling sucks for it. I hate solo leveling. It's like, it just cuts to its ED. I'm like, no, I don't want, like, it's so almost jarring, but it's like, it's always like, yes, of course you want to be left wanting more from an anime or a show you're watching, but it's so like, it's almost like throwing a bucket of cold water over you and like pulling you out of your immersion and your enjoyment of it. Yeah, I think, but this does it very well, ending and wrapping up this episode completely.
Quickly circling back to solo leveling, I hate it so much how they do those endings as well, especially because you're like, oh, okay, there is actually going to be a little teaser for the next episode. All it is like the title card. Yep. Like, why are you wasting my time? Respect the viewer's time more. Just weave that in more seamlessly instead of, yeah, being so jarring in that hard cut, which is just unnecessary. But you've finished first quarter.
Yeah, I'm completely up to date. I'm not looking forward. We're recording this on a Saturday. I'm not looking forward to waking up tomorrow.
Yeah, because I don't have it.
There's not a new episode of it. I'm not looking forward to that whatsoever. I'm like, what? And it's the worst thing. It's always a pet peeve when, like, I love a Sunday morning anime. I don't know what it is. Like, whatever anime you release, like Haikyuu released on a Sunday for a very long time for me. And you get in the routine of, you know, you wake up, I grab a bowl of cereal, almost like I'm a kid, and I sit down on the couch and I watch anime while I watch the first episode for the day. So I know tomorrow I'm going to be very out of routine. I'm going to find something else.
Yeah, like, all we're going to have tomorrow, like, we've still got, I think, one episode of MASH to drop, which is great. We've also got the finale for season two of The Dangers in My Heart dropping. So I've still got two of the usual Sunday rotations for me. But yeah, solo leveling, I read all the webtoon front to back in the last week and a half, because mm-hmm. the season finished. I'm like, I need to know what's happening.
Yes.
So I jumped on and I've just read it all. So now I'm like, okay, I know what's coming for the next potentially 6 years of the anime, but I also want it all now, and now I'm sad.
And it's funny, you mentioned MASH. MASH is another anime. I haven't watched it yet, but I feel the same way I felt about Mob Psycho before watching it, looking at MASH, where I'm like, this art style looks insane. These character designs looks insane. Like, it's definitely something I'm going to jump into and watch at some point, but it's very much where, and it's a very common thing with anime where it's like, if it's out of the ordinary, if it's not, if it's a bit off left center, I always find it a bit harder to jump in with stuff like the MASH.
It's so fun. It is so fun. And this second season has just been absolute belter. So yeah, jump in. If you're looking for something to check out, definitely check out MASH. It's so great. The tone, it just leans similar tone to Mob Psycho 100 away, where you've got this absurdity and this humor mixed with this realism and these heartfelt moments, and it just works. And yeah, the ending for episode one of Mob Psycho 100 certainly worked, and it bookends with some very, very tasty ramen shots where they're eating some pork shoyu ramen. Made me very Moorish, made me very drooly at the mouth again, because your anime cuisine just always looks better almost than it does in real life. And I had a chuckle again where you can hear Reagan dictating to how much pork actually Mob can get in his ramen in comparison to Reagan's. And they have the shot and it's like, Mob has two slices of pork in his ramen where Reagan's got like seven. So you can see this power dynamic and the hierarchy even evident in a delicious bowl of ramen. I'm like, God damn it, now I want some. But I can also see this dynamic continue to play out, and I'm happy to see it in food form.
Yeah, it's I guess, ever, you know, anime food is always so ridiculously good looking, especially, you know, watching through Shoko no Geki. Like, it is, you just, food, anime food just looks incredible no matter when you watch it. You could have eaten like 10 minutes before you watched it and you'll see it and you'll be like, yeah, I could go for some more. I could go for food. Like, I could eat that ramen up. So yeah, it's both a great way of, you know, showing Japanese culture, showing ramen culture, but then also, yeah, further displaying that dynamic between the characters and using, you know, using as many moments as possible to build up and tell, you know, it's very much the case of show, don't tell. Like, show us the dynamic. Don't so much use exposition and characters telling us about it.
And I love too, in these ending scenes, it is very much, it felt like a throwback to cartoons as a kid, where you get, you know, tune in next week for this, and you get a couple of scenes from the next episode, and we get some voiceover work from Reagan there giving us a bit of a teaser episode two, and there's a line in there about, you know, what's going to happen when Mob enters the world of women, and you're like, this is sort of super 90s cheese, super 90s throwback, but again, it just hit me right, I guess, being a kid that was, you know, grew up in the 90s, it just resonated with me, and I'm like, yes, I'm in. Let's chuck this second episode on. I want to consume it all just like that bowl of rum.
100%. It is very much a show where you don't need to sit there and think, oh, am I going to watch the next episode? It's, oh, no, that's just straight into it. Crunchyroll, skip me to the next episode, please. Mm-hmm. Like, let's go straight ahead.
Yeah, hell yeah, hell yeah. So on that topic, have you watched beyond episode one? Because I know we initially talked about doing this podcast maybe 4 to 6 weeks ago at a minute, maybe even longer now. But have you held off? Have you followed the path of Mob Psycho 100 beyond episode one?
I've watched the first, I think, 5 episodes. It's very much something where I'm like, I watched the first 5 episodes because watching this one episode, I'm like, I think I need to watch more to recolor and cement how I'm feeling about the first episode more and get that proper palette complete and full of it. It's something I definitely intend to go back to. It's just hasn't in the grand scheme of watching things, just hasn't been something I've gone back to just yet. But it's not something that I'm putting to the side. It's not something that I'm saying, nah, never going back to. But it's definitely good enough to be there. And as soon as there's a lull, maybe even tomorrow morning when I don't have solo leveling, it'll be straight back in.
Yay, there you go. That's exciting. So I'm happy that we've sort of landed on a first watch that is a thumbs up as opposed to, like, it's a thumbs middle or thumbs down. So that's a positive. Want to know, did you watch this subbed or dubbed?
Subbed. I found it very hard to watch dubbed, not so much because of the voice acting, but lip flaps being off for me is very jarring and very, like, I don't know, there's something about just the way my brain works that if I see the audio and the lip flaps just don't match, I'll just generally always watch the sub, and just that's kind of my default for most things.
I don't know if I've ever heard the term lip flaps before, and I don't know how I feel about it. I'm going to have to think about that a little bit more.
That is the voice acting term for it, I guess, because it is.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So, because, like, when they do dubs, generally the anime is already out, and so it's a skill for voice actors where they have to try and get the English to match the voice, the lip flaps that they use for the Japanese. And it's a very hard skill, and a lot of the times, you know, the English sentence or translation won't quite fit correct into the lip flaps of what the Japanese was.
Lip flaps. There you go. You learn something new every day, listeners. There you go. But something else I'd like to learn is, what is your last word presented by our friends over at Japan Crate? Experience Japan through snacks and knickknacks via monthly package drops courtesy of JapanCrate.com. And while you're there, be sure to use code 8BIT15 at checkout to get 15% off your order, as well as free delivery to anywhere on planet Earth. But Kieran, what is your last word or words or thoughts on Mob Psycho 100?
I think Mob Psycho 100 is a palate cleanser. It's refreshing to watch. Like, it is in a world where you can, you know, for myself, getting into sports anime, or you watch a lot of shonens, it can be, at some points, you can very much feel very samey, very, you know, like I'm watching the same sort of art style a lot. Everything about this show is refreshing, whether it's the art style, whether it's the humor, where it's the way it's building characters and the characters are interplaying with each other. I think everything about this show is refreshing is probably the perfect word I could use for Mob Psycho 100 for me.
I love that. Who doesn't want to feel refreshed? Like, exactly. It is a nice, delicious, crazy looking cocktail, and it is well worth consuming. And listeners, if you're still on the fence about Mob Psycho 100, here's sort of the highest recommendations coming out of the My Anime List listing for Mob Psycho 100. So if you like One Punch Man, funnily enough, if you like Saki K, if you like Killer 7, or if you like My Hero Academia, there's a fair chance you're gonna like Mob Psycho 100. But Kieran, thank you so much for stopping on by. I appreciate you taking the time out of your very, very busy schedule with everything you've got going on at the moment to riff on More Than Hentai with me. But I wanted to ask, before we do the final, you know, shout outs to where people can find you and your content, I want you to recommend an anime for the listeners and myself to check out. So what's something you want to throw at us to be like, you got to check this out, and what?
Oh gosh. Oh no. I would. It's always so hard.
Sorry.
It's always so. Wait, let me open up Crunchyroll real quick. I'll just play cool music in the background, mm-hmm, everyone. Mm-hmm. Pretend I am riffing really well on this while I quickly look at my watch history. Oh no, it's real bad because I share my me and Dad watch anime together, so there's some stuff that he watches that I'm not there for.
I love that.
Like it's got to be, I guess it's a sports, for I've got to recommend something sports based, because
okay,
sports anime is very much, I think, not a genre that people maybe instantly get into when you're used to anime and you're used to fighting and used to getting into. There's so many, and so many are well popularized. You know what? I actually will recommend Kuroko no Basket for anybody who hasn't watched Kuroko no Basket. I think it's a very good intro anime, or an intro into sports anime, because it's not that long. It has really good characters and interpersonal relationships, but at the same time, great music, and also has, you know, if you are a fan of shonens or wacky power scaling anime, it has a lot of mm-hmm wacky characters with abilities where they can 3-point shoot from anywhere on the court, and you know, and those insane, you know, if you want to watch an anime character, you know, walk away from a ball going into the basket while he's pushing up his glasses, like that's the kind of motion around it. And I think Kuroko no Basket's a lot of fun, and it's a really good starting point for sports anime in general.
Hell yeah, it's pretty much NBA Jam the anime.
Yes.
And it is so fun, and it's not only available on Crunchyroll, but if you are a listener and don't have Crunchyroll, it's also on Netflix, so you can peek it over there too. A couple of seasons as well as a couple of movies to sort of bridge those gaps available, and yeah, it's good fun. If we're going to go on the anime sports centric front, I don't know if you're going to classify as a sport, but I was just thinking of stuff I've watched that we haven't talked about. Maybe like Skate the Infinity or Birdie Wing.
I love Skate the Infinity.
Yes.
One of my favorite intros.
Yeah,
favorite intros. It is such a good intro. But you know, I'm 100% for Skate the Infinity.
Yeah. Well. So also check out Skate the Infinity if you're looking to consume some fantastic sporting content, or if you want something a little cheeky and a little naughty in the sporting realm as well, check out Kaijo. The less I say about that, the better. I'll keep intrigue there for listeners to check out the trailer for that. Kieran, yeah, thank you so much for stopping on by. Anything you want to shout out as far as what you got cooking, what you're working on, where they can find you and all your fantastic content?
Of course. As always, explosionnetwork.com. Check us out. We do all your games, your movies, your TV show coverage. We've just started a brand new show where I'm actually hosting called Storied Experiences. It actually happens over on twitch.tv/explosionnetwork. All things story related and discussions, and we're actually at the moment Ashley, Dylan and me are playing through season one of Telltale's The Walking Dead, but every time we get to a major choice in it, we actually pause the game and we have a discussion about the choice, and we debate the choice between the three of us, you know, often leading to some very interesting dynamics of where each of us are feeling about characters. I think we've got a good range. Dylan and me have both played Walking Dead before and we have some experience, mm-hmm. whereas Ashley is playing it through for the first time with us. So it's some really interesting discussion. We get to talk about narrative design and how Telltale has kind of shaped narratives going forward from its initial release of Telltale's Walking Dead season one. And then, you know, discussing at the end of it, where video games have gone in general for storytelling since it was originally released in 2011, 2012.
That sounds really fun. Are you going to be releasing that content sort of in podcast or standalone video form to consume later, or is it just on Twitch?
No. So we do, it's fortnightly at the moment. We've done the first two episodes. Don't know when this releases, but whenever this is out, there'll be probably three episodes out. It's also on our YouTube channel, Explosion Network on YouTube, for both the full, I guess, let's play and discussions of us playing through. But then also there is a short form video of the last 10 to 15 minutes after each episode. We break down the episode as a whole, what's worked, what doesn't work, looking back at it, and once again discussing a lot of the story elements and where this could possibly go next and how it unfolds as a Telltale narrative.
So good. You guys are absolute machines when it comes to content creation. So your listeners, head on over to explosionnetwork.com and find all their fantastic content over there. Or if you wanted to hunt down Kieran individually at Ya Boy Ringo, which is YaboyRingo, you can find me on the socials at More Than Senpai, and you can find all this fantastic content at morethanhentai.life. You can find the web store there. You can find heaps of videos, exclusive access to perks, giveaways, and exclusive content on there. And you can also subscribe and join the Segoi Squad, should you choose, over at morethanhentai.life. I'll be sure to rate, view, subscribe this podcast and the 23 with an asterisk podcast that the Explosion Network have released. Might be 25 by the time this episode comes out. Likely. Who knows? But yeah, rate, view, subscribe. It takes no time, costs no money, and just means the world to us content creators. But whether your anime be subbed, dubbed, or still yet to come, enjoy yourself, stay hungry, and much love to all the gorgeous waifus out there. On behalf of Kieran and myself, goodbye.